Warning, the following podcast contains spoilers and swears. Three, two, yes, everybody's clapping.
Oh,
three, two, one. All right, close enough.
Clap I've ever heard.
It's fine. This is on par for everything we do.
Okay, I'll figure it out.
Funny. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Okay.
Well, hello. Who are you?
No, Dad, we gotta do the intro first.
What's the intro first?
This is a podcast.
Yeah, you say, hi, I'm Evelyn Rogers.
What's the podcast?
This is what you normally. What is this podcast called, Evelyn?
Fillery and Father.
And who are you?
I'm Evelyn Rogers. And you are?
Your father, Scott Rogers.
Uh-huh.
And we have somebody special here today. For the very first time, we have a guest.
No, second time.
Well, who are you, guest?
I'm just happy to be here.
We have Aaron Murphy from the Fic List podcast.
Yay! Our friends Aaron. From the Fic List. Well, welcome, Aaron. It's so nice to have you. We have Evelyn's
ever.
Mother. Evelyn's mother was the first guest.
She counts.
She does count. That is true. Because otherwise I will never hear the end of it. And right. But Aaron, you are our second guest. And not only are you a big Magicians fan, but you are one of our steadfast Twitter followers, which we greatly appreciate.
Absolutely.
So this is this should be a message for all you other fans of Fillery and Father. If you are as devoted a Fillery and Father fan as Aaron is, you might end up on the show.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. This is me cashing in my appearance on the Fic List early.
Yeah, really.
All right. So what are we talking about today, Evelyn?
Today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 7, Plan B. Did you write down who directed it?
Chris Fisher directed.
Hey, there we go.
All right. What happened?
Let's just get into it.
Can we talk about... What a huge pain in the ass Alice Niffin is.
She's great. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm with Evelyn. I love Alice Niffin.
She's so mean. It's great.
Right. But would you want that constantly going on your ear all the time?
No. But
Can I have Olivia in my brain all the time? Is that an option? Because, like, Olivia would call me.
Do we know if Olivia is like that for realsies?
No, she's very sweet.
She seems lovely in real life, which is also why I want just her to be like my friend.
You just want her hanging around in the background.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, we open at the Breakbills library with Alice nagging Quentin. It's great. And she's like, you know, keep on responding to me and they'll call the brain police and you've got priors.
Yeah, so, that line's rough, man. Yeah. So I wrote down, I took notes. Hello, friends.
Yay!
My name is Aaron. I'm from the Fic List. I take notes. and I wrote, do you really think Jason Ralph has a hairy back, or was that just a mean thing that was said?
I think he does.
Yeah. We've seen Jason Ralph's back before, and he is definitely not hairy.
Right. Yeah. I was like,
A little bit.
Hairy chest, arms. Sure. But not a hairy back. So that was a mean thing for Alice. Because Alice Niffin, remember, is just a Niffin. It's not Alice. So Alice Niffin maybe hasn't seen Naked Q.
Seen Niffin like it's her last name.
Right, it is. This is Alice Niffin. Alice B. Niffin is her
What's
full name.
What's the B stand for, Dad?
She be a Niffin.
Hearing the dad jokes live, y'all, is such a gift.
But Quentin says he doesn't want to release Alice because then the only option he'll have is to box her. And she's like, how are you such a, why do you think this is what I want? Like, are you such a good judge of our, you know, relationship and me as a person? Because, you know, based on our priors, like our garbage fire of a relationship that ended with Elliot's dick in your mouth. So, you know, it's a great line. I love that line. It's good. It's good.
I always have so many feelings about that line, Evelyn. But, like, I feel like I am someone who has feelings about all things, and maybe this isn't the hill I want to die on.
I personally just enjoy her being mean.
I personally think that that Quentin should have just boxed Alice Niffin and be done with it. Just because, granted, Alice Niffin comes out helpful in this episode. So that's, that's, you know, a reason, I guess, to keep, you know, is it a them or a her? What gender is a Niffin, by the way?
Alice uses she, her.
Okay, so I would just box Alice Niffin in the box and then be done with it. Because, to be honest, we all know that Quentin has had prior problems with mental health. And the last thing he needs is to be walking around talking to himself and arguing with himself and all that.
Well, I mean, this happens again.
just put the Niffin in a box, go find a new girlfriend, and be done with it. That's what I say.
Or he could just be with Elliot, but that's a separate conversation.
Well, right. All right. Yes, that's true. But when I say girlfriend...
What do you mean then?
Anyone who wears a vest. How about that?
Olivia doesn't wear vests.
He wears waistcoats, Dad.
First of all.
Doesn't Elliot wear vests all the time?
Waistcoats.
Waistcoats. It's the same thing. It's a
No, it's not.
It's a jacket without sleeves. That's a vest.
Oh, my God.
Y'all can't see me because this is an audio medium, but I'm making a face.
But Alice, you know, she asks Quentin, she says, let me take over your body. I can't even be a Niffin when I'm a Niffin. Like, I can't do shit right now. I'm just stuck here and I'm just going to keep annoying you until you get bored or like go crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. It sucks for Quentin. It sucks for the Niffin. It sucks for everybody.
Yeah, and like, all realistically, right. Yeah, should he let her go? Of course. But is Quentin ever going to let her go? No, that's not how Q operates.
No.
He's never going to. And that's where the dramatic tension comes in, because it's a TV show.
But then we get to see Katie and Julia outside a Korean butcher's place. It's the contact that Hannah's friend set Katie up with. And you get to see them shaking knives in front of Julia to assess the situation. I totally forgot about that.
it flipped onto that scene, and I was just like, oh, yeah, that is how they introduced this, isn't it?
And then they start, the two women, they start to argue, presumably over Julia. And there's, like, no subtitles or anything, so you don't know what they're saying if you don't speak Korean. And... it just, like, kind of shows Julia and Katie looking confused. And then one of the women leaves. And
Has anybody translated what they said?
In Netflix, they don't. They just says speak in Korean.
Right, but has anybody online translated it?
I don't know.
Why not?
Why would I know?
Well, because you're a Magicians fan and you want to know everything that's being said? Hey, yeah. I just went online... to find out what Bib Fortuna said in Hadees
Mandalorian. We don't need to bring up the Mandalorian.
Sure we do. This is filler and father. We need to bring up the Mandalorian.
It's not a Mandalorian podcast.
The point is, as a fan, I would want to know every bit of dialogue because it would have a little more lore into the world, right?
Okay. But basically the woman says that this wouldn't be an abortion. It would be an exorcism at this point because... the kind of energy that's coming from the fetus has tied to Julia's energy. And the longer it stays inside, the more dangerous it becomes for her. And so they gotta get that shit out of there. So she goes over and gives them the bill. It's just, it's just a little bit. It's just $1 million in gold.
Just a cool $1 million, but not dollars.
Yeah, she's like, it's fine. Two big bars. Two gold bars. How easy is that to get, you know?
Well, they're magicians. They can just turn something into gold, right?
Well, no.
Funny, you should say that. That comes up later.
Yeah. Their first thought is pawn shops. And they're like, that's going to take too long. You know, like, where are we going to get this money? Like, rob a bank?
That's a lot of stuff to get from pawn shops, right?
Right. Yeah,
but they're not going to do that. They're going to rob a bank instead.
Their sort of thought process is pawn shops? No. Time. Wait. Bank? Yes.
But okay, so let me ask, though, how many banks actually have gold bars in them? Other than Fort Knox, which is like a Federal Reserve, do we actually know of any banks that have stacks of gold bars in them that you can steal?
This bank, the one that they robbed.
I mean, how do they know that this bank that just happens to be in the same town that the Magicians takes place in has gold bars in it?
It's a big city. It's probably
What city are they in? New York?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, well, maybe. Maybe there's some gold bars. Although, why don't they just, like, rob some mafia guys or something? Wouldn't that be easier?
The mafia guys generally don't have a sign out front of their house or place of residence that says, hi, we have money here.
True, so. But they are magicians, and they could have mafia-finding spells.
They could. I can't argue that point, because technically, they could.
This show,
but I think it was easier to Google the bank location.
This show is... has every other type of very particular spell in it. It's like Hell's in Big Trouble in Little China. They have a hell for everything. So they have a spell for everything. Ah, that rhymes. I think that they just wanted to have a heist episode is really what
it is. And it's so good.
Once again, the writers were sitting around and they're like, well, we've run out of actual plot points from the books. And so we have to come up with something else. And of course, like we talked about last episode, their very first thought was
bank heist. But it's a good thought.
True. I would admit this is one of their better impulse thoughts as the writing team.
I also think this particular episode and the concept of a bank heist takes so much advantage of one of the strengths of this show, which is their ensemble cast. The way that these actors like operate as an ensemble is gold. Ha ha ha.
Right.
And either the writers were smart enough to know that, or like it just kind of happened naturally in the writers' room where that's where it drifted to. And a bank heist works so great for that kind of situation.
I'm going
to
go with the second character based off of all the previous stuff we've seen in the show.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
That it just happened to be well, let's just have everybody involved, right? Rather than, oh, hey, everybody works together. Let's keep doing this as an ensemble show. Unlike, you know, a show like, let's say, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which the majority of the episodes had all the characters in it together, because that was also a great ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that said, I mean, okay, granted, this is a heist episode, and we'll talk about how many crowns later worth of a heist episode this is. But that said, I still recommend if you like heist episodes, or even better, if you hate heist episodes, watch. You have no hand to cover my mouth this time.
I will open the door.
Watch the Rick and Morty heist episode.
I will go into the other room and I will smack you.
Which I'm going to make you watch.
No.
And heck, maybe even we'll do a special episode on it.
No, we're not.
Yeah, why not?
No.
Yes, I think we should do the Rick and Morty heist episode as a special, like a special Patreon episode.
No.
Maybe we could start a Patreon and do some extra like Mandalorian episodes.
And do you see what
Rick
I deal with?
I do.
Yeah. Anyway, Dad.
I don't know if Alan is much better. Shout out, Alan.
Anyway, we cut to Fillory.
You keep trying, Alan. That's what I say.
Don't
encourage him.
No.
Alan, love you, bye.
We love Alan. Well, we cut to Fillory, and it turns out there's no take backsies when you call war. And so we get to see Tick Pickwick in another royal advisor who's very good looking.
And we also get to see...
What, right?
I know, she's like so hot.
Really beautiful. I was like, wait a minute. Hold up.
All right. Do you guys have any more gushing over the royal advisor?
No, we get to see her push along a little, like, a little war figurines to show where Loria is and where Fillory is. And how they're going to penetrate the grudge gap.
No, Unnecessary use of the word penetrate, but whatever.
Yeah.
Let's stop for a minute.
No.
And let's talk about, again, the magician's complete habit of having lousy game-type mechanisms in their show again, because that is clearly a chessboard and not a Kriegspiel.
That's literally like what people do,
it's
though.
Obviously,
in like
was
is
just
they
a
have
prop.
Little things that they push around.
No, wait a second.
It's literally a thing that they do, though.
It is not. They were not. That was not a Kriegspiel board at all, which is called a sandbox. And it's not that those pieces were not Kriegspiel pieces. Obviously, they just had a chessboard laying around and they said, oh, if we push it with this little stick, maybe people will think it's this. But they didn't anticipate me, who has great knowledge of this, watching the show and once again getting irate about the fact of their shoddy representation of game type mechanics.
You can write a letter to John McNamara. And
maybe he'll listen
really,
to this.
He really appreciates feedback on representation.
He sure loves feedback, yeah. Dad.
I'm sure he loves any sort of feedback based on how he responds to your fans' emails and Twitters.
But we find out that Fillory's broke. Uh-oh, they spent too much money trying to, quote Margot, de-shitten the wellspring. And now they can't afford to go to war either. And
can I ask how expensive can a fantasy plumber really be?
I mean, if it's godly poops.
Well, I know that, you know, getting a plumber can be expensive at times. But that said, really, how expensive could it have been? They change a few filters, they run a net through it a few times.
It's like dangerous, you know, to go in there.
They put in some desalinization tablets, okay, and it's done, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Once again, another plot point stretched so long. This is Penny's Hands, mm-hmm, part two. It's just
Penny's
another.
Penny's Hands still don't work, Dad.
Yeah, I know. Well, at least Penny's Hands are working now. But now the poop plot point isn't working.
We don't need to keep talking about the shit. It's bad
I think we
enough.
Just need to accept that it happened.
Yes. It happened, but it's an excuse, right?
They're saying, oh, we're having all this problem. It's messing up all this magic.
Yeah, but
we
need
don't
a plot device for Margot to unintentionally trade away Ben's child.
But we don't have any sort of ramifications of this, right? Wouldn't it be affecting, like, if they tried to cast spells, they might all of a sudden get, like, a glitch?
That's literally what happens next episode.
But it's not next episode yet.
It
it's
is
this
next
episode. And they're talking about how jammed up the wellspring is and you know, that it's causing all these trouble, but yet we don't see any ramifications of that.
We do. We saw Dean Fong try to cast some magic, and it didn't work, like, that one time.
Yeah, he did one thing.
Yeah, I know. The rules are shoddy. Yeah, but we gotta,
I don't think they're making it a consistent enough plot point to make it feel like it's a real problem.
But
you may have come to the wrong show if consistency was your primary motivation.
Hey, I didn't choose this show. It's Fillory and Father. It's not Dad and Fillory.
Dad and Dad and Dad keeps talking and Dad keeps talking and Dad keeps talking. But we see Katie and Julia.
Oh my God, I love Katie and Julia.
They're so best bitches. We love work out.
Yeah, I mean, honestly though.
Yes. But they're checking out the bank and there's magical residue like all over the bank. And so they can't really get inside. And then the Hacks and Paxson, they've like kept him in like their trunk or something. Like he's in the back of the car. And he's making some noise and like, oh, we should go like let him out or something. And then an invisible monster comes and attacks them.
I wrote the Wimble Womble Attack because they've just got this like really weird looking little like mid 2000 Silver Surfer visual effect.
All the like air is like rippled and stuff. And they fight and like Katie gets like slammed against a wall, I think. But then the Haxon Paxon goes and defends Julia because Julia's like, she gets pinned to the ground or something. And he gets very easily killed. Yep. Poor Haxon Paxon. Lasted an episode and a half.
That poor guy. He was like, hey, I'm a supporting cast member. No, I've been killed. Let's have a moment of silence for the Haxon Paxon.
Yeah, and then, but he managed to kill.
Not a moment of silence.
No, this is an audio medium. He manages to kill the invisible monster, and a bloody spoon drops on the ground. It's very gross.
Yes, they killed the Haxon Paxon with a spoon.
No.
That's honestly, Evelyn, that is what I thought the first time.
Did he just
get stabbed to death? Did the rip the organ out with a spoon? Like, I was confused. Like, that mechanism did not make sense.
Yeah, and then, like, Julia's like, oh, we should, like, bury him. And then Katie's like, oh, we don't have time. We have to find out where the spoon came from. And she's like, okay.
And then they just leave him there.
Yeah. Is he, like, what did they do with the body?
What happened? That's a whole other spin-off show of, like, some procedural where the entire thing is figuring out what the hell this thing is that they just found in this alley.
All the body count.
Whole other show, yeah.
It's just every single dead body on the show and, like, what they did with it afterwards.
Yep. They could do, what's that show that is based on the cops and What We Do in the Shadows? That's, like, just the two dumb cops kind of blundering around and finding all the vampire victims and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes, that's,
I don't know that one.
It's called like Wellbury PD or something like that, or I forget the name of it. All right. Yeah. Anyway, but, well, that's the fourth spin-off show that we've now created from this show.
Yeah. But and then maybe, we see,
and at least three of them might be better than this show.
But we see Julia
Rogers hot takes.
Yeah. But Julia goes to Break Bills and gets checked out by Professor Lipson and Dean Fogg, and Lipson asks Julia if she's seen the Twilight movies. The last one.
We know how I feel about Twilight, correct?
Yeah, but this is finally the writers admitting that they've ripped off Twilight as a plot point.
No.
They just can't. They just can't. Their guilt over ripping off Twilight is so strong.
No, because I mean, like, Julia's not, it's not like Julia's, like, drinking blood out of, like a fucking, like, to-go cup and going, it tastes good, you know?
Well, they can't do that completely, right? But, I mean, you know, at least somebody felt guilty enough to go, yeah, we better acknowledge that we're ripping off Twilight. So that way, you know, at least we can go, well, hey, we mentioned that we're ripping it off.
Yeah, but Lipson tells us what the Mudong, which are the two women, the Hedges, already told Julia and Katie was that her essence is tied to the fetus inside of her. And you gotta get that sucker out. You know?
Or it's Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears, yes, Erin.
You're welcome.
Thank you. But Dean Fogg is like, you know what? She can stay here. She's a special case because Julia and I have a past. And that's all we get from that. Mm-hmm. And then we see Quentin at the cottage. He's doing some research about Niffins, and Alice is bothering him, of course. And Julia, goes on up to Alice's room, and Q goes up to Katie, and he's like, oh, what happened? And Katie just gives him, like, a measured look, you know. And then we go inside Alice's room, where Julia is just... You know,
can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Both of you a question?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
What do you think Alice's bedroom smells like?
Why?
Because I think it could smell like a candle from the Magic Candle Company, our sponsor.
Oh, I hate
from
you
this
so
week.
Much.
In the Magic Candle
so
Company,
much.
You can have
I
smells of your
you so
favorite
much.
Theme parks,
oh,
like Pirate's
my
Life,
God.
Or Polynesian,
no.
Or Haunted, or Banshee Flight. Or I flying over Orange Groves, or my you. Favorite, Pineapple Whip, which is what I think Alice's room smells like. Pineapples, which would be lovely.
Please stop.
And so you can find all these candles and more at magiccandlecompany.com. Our sponsor for this week, who isn't paying us, but maybe they'll hear this and be motivated enough to pay us for this ad. So thank you, Magic Candle Company. Now back to the show.
I hate you. Okay, but you're my dumb dad. But you can hear Juliet, she's like, just say it. I'm like fucking cursed, you know? I must have been a serial killer in my past life. And Alice is like, well, guess who fucking exploded in this life?
Can we talk about the physicality of this scene, though? Because I feel the sheer sort of like story being told from a physical perspective, you can see what the three of them are going through in their physicality so clearly, particularly physical acting comedy master person Jason Ralph. Just like his skill blows my mind when you just watch him, because he's interacting with nothing sometimes, and then he's probably like, and then he has like Olivia pacing back and forth in front of him, harassing him the other times when they're doing other takes, and it's just so consistent and it's so fascinating and it's so, that is so difficult to do well, and it's so well done, and I love Jason Ralph, and I just wanted to acknowledge that he's the best.
Thank you. As it should be.
Yeah, he gets a lot of fun stuff, you know, and what's nice about his physical acting, not only is he doing goofy stuff like we see later on in the bank and all that, but you're right. His physical, he is really good at, he needs to work on a movie with more green screen in it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get him and George Lucas together, because then George can have like all these, he can have all these digital characters to interact with, but he'll probably do a really good job with them. Although I do have to say that you have to, I mean, now maybe they had a person in a green suit or something, but I think both Julia and Katie also did a great job fighting the invisible monster in this, right? Yeah. Like that's some, like they were doing some good invisible strangling, but I think that that one, they probably had a person in a green suit just because the way that Julia's hands were kind of like grasped around the monster, like looked too accurate for it to be anything but like somebody in a green screen costume.
I just really like, I focused a lot on like Olivia's body language in that scene, because she's really, I really love that bit, because she's like darting around and constantly circling Q and getting really up, like, she, you know, we see it before, like she's getting up in his personal space and stuff, but I just like love the way she keeps dipping in and out and she's constantly moving to show that like she, you know, feels contained and like restless being stuck with him. It's so good.
And it's so the opposite of everything we know of Alice.
Yes, because she's so fucking rigid and stiff all the time. And then, you know, once she's uninhibited as a Niffin, she's just like wiggling like crazy.
This is why I love Niffin Alice.
I love Niffin Alice. She's the best. But Quentin tells Julia that he promised to help with Reynard, and he doesn't intend on breaking that promise. So he's like, ask me anything. I'll do it. And Julia's like, want to help us rob a bank?
And then Alice turns around and goes, oh my god, yes.
It's so good.
Best line.
I love it. And then we see Penny in the library talking to a professor, and he's like, hey, so I need this book for Mayakovsky. And he's like, yeah, sorry. It was a Polish book, and it got destroyed by the eugenics books, and now it's kept separate. We keep all the anti-Semitic texts together now. And so, and then the professor leaves, and we see Penny and Katie. This is the first time they've seen each other since Breakbill South, and the way Argent is just looking at Jade is so good. It's so good, Erin.
It's so good. I wrote Penny Katie, and then my immediate next note is, but this is inappropriate library behavior.
Oh, absolutely it is. I mean, Katie is so awkward, and she's like, you know, she doesn't know what to say, and then they just drop both their books and furiously make out.
Yeah, they've got to have gotten some complaints from the other people in the library.
No, it's fine. There was no one else there.
Well, but later
Except
on, they were
literally just walked away because yeah. he was going to get the book.
Even afterwards, though, they were still being very loud in the library. They were talking.
They knocked many books off of shelves.
Yeah. Yes, but it's wonderful. The only straight couple I truly support in this show, aside from maybe like Margot and Penny, but that never happens, so it doesn't count.
Right.
Yeah. But then
yeah,
we see,
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but then we see Elliot in, like, he's in his little nap time on his bed, and Fancy comes up to him. He's sleeping on top of his covers.
Yep.
Why?
Chest hair out.
Yeah.
It's like, a choice was made here.
And
we see him ugly.
And then we see him where he, his dream consciousness is, and he's in his golem with Margot. Quentin comes up to them and he's like, "Hey, I gotta talk to you guys about something. Like, we need some help." And like, "What do you help?" Because Fillory is broke right now. And he's like, "What are you talking about? Like, you got all those nugget beetles." Yeah, apparently they went extinct, you know? Sucks
to
suck. Everything's terrible. And, you know, all of alchemy is just illusionist, as you said, Aaron. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And we loop back.
Yeah. And Quentin's like, okay, I need help with something. And they're like, "What?" He's like, "Can you help me rob a bank?"
And Margot is like, "It is my moment."
Yes, it's so good.
Yeah, finally Margot, after a, well, actually Margot had a good episode last episode too, but yes, this is definitely a good chunk of Margot's episode, at least this middle section here.
Yep.
Although I was wondering, you know, as we were watching this, you know, how everybody was like, "Oh, I've always wanted to rob a bank," right? Like Penny says that, and you know, Evelyn said that while we were watching, and that makes me wonder: has anybody done like an escape room? I mean, okay, granted, it's 2020; we can't do these right now, but I have a business idea. How about we do a escape room type thing where you rob a bank, you go in and, you know, maybe even get like an hour to case the joint to get information. And then you can actually go in. And I'm sure there's got to be like an abandoned, you know, old bank somewhere, right? Now, granted, you have to have some sort of safety way to make sure that they don't get locked into the vault accidentally. But how cool would that be? Would you do that if that were a business, like a escape room, but you're robbing a bank?
I think so. I think that'd be fun. I've also always wanted to rob a bank. So if I could do that
too,
and then not go to jail, that would be the ideal scenario.
Well, exactly. And then maybe you could get the option to either do it violently, like have kind of fake, you know, gunplay, or you could do it not violently, or you could dress up like supervillains and rob the bank.
Uh-huh.
Can I run the costume department?
Sure, let's talk after the show.
Awesome, great.
But we get this lovely little back and forth scene of Penny and Katie and Q and Elliot and Margot all talking about how they're going to rob a bank. And I do have to point out, Penny says this great line. He says, "You're not going to ask the traveler, you can just fuck the shit out of to help." So good.
Well, the best part of that is Katie's like, "Well, I didn't really think I had a right to." And the Arjun, bless his heart, just turns and has the best sort of shift in his expression and just is like, "No, ask."
It's so good.
It's so funny. It's so good. I think I wrote, my note was Arjun, heart, heart, heart.
Yes, see, literally. Yeah. But eventually they all agree, even, you know, Elliot and Margot, who really don't like Julia, and Elliot says, "You know, we're emotionally advanced. We can hold resentment and sympathy for our people at the same time." And then the Scooby gang's all gathered around in the cottage, and Margo's like, "Okay, who here has actually robbed a bank before?" And she raises her hand.
It's so good.
It's so good.
And Elliot's like, "What?
When was this? Yeah. And she's like, "You know, senior year of high school, I had some problems." Oh, it's so wonderful. But then Margot kind of gives like a perfect heist kind of lay down of what's going to happen and how.
Well, the transition into that shift is actually brilliant. Like that camera wipe effect situation that they do is like comedically extremely well timed, I think.
It's well, I so think it's funny. Also kind of you see it a lot in heist movies, right? That kind right. of wipe, you know, then we're gonna whoosh, then we're gonna do
it's
this.
So evocative
whoosh, then
we're gonna do genre. This.
Yeah. It's so good. And we get this lovely like Margot voiceover talking about how every kind of bank has magical security systems owned by magicians, but everyone working there like doesn't know that they are the ones controlling it. And that the specific bank they're going to, they have to have fingerprints from two managers to open the door to get to the inner kind of sanctum where there's a 10-digit combo to the actual safe. We had a mic issue.
Okay, just go.
Okay. But as I said, we get to see the kind of wipe of what's going on in the lowdown of everything. And that there are battle magicians that kind of camp out in the bank, and all they do is just like wait for people to steal stuff, which is you know
that's a job.
I know, but like she just like lives down there in her little bunker, and that's all she does.
So let me ask you a question, because when they show like a quick flash of battle magician, they have a whole wall of like weapons and throwing stars and like some sort of baby doll
katanas
up on there. Did you see there was like some sort of voodoo doll or something up on there? I mean, it was silhouettes, so you could, but there was definitely a little like a little doll shape on there. If they're using magic and you know, why don't they just use magic? Like we see Katie zapping like magic missiles at bad guys in, you know, last episode. Why don't they just have access to that? Like why do they need machine guns and all those other weapons?
Magical machine guns.
Well, do they shoot magic
bullets? If you
think
I didn't have the same question written down in my notes, Mr. Rush, we have not. You don't know me very well. Because I was like, isn't she supposed to be able to do magic?
Right. I mean,
why does she need an AK-47?
Otherwise,
I have questions.
Otherwise, they just can put some sort of like golem or another unliving creature down there. You know, that would just attack.
Or they could have just had, like, a security guard. Well, they, like, what's the point? You're paying this woman probably very well.
Well, we did see how good the regular security guards were doing.
Oh, yeah. They're garbage.
They were, like, living up. Those two actors, they were, like,
well,
making
they're garbage security guards.
Yes, they are garbage security guards. But they were making the most out of their scene, right? They got to have sex. They got the disco dance.
Yeah.
They were living it up. They made the most of their 2 minutes on screen.
Yeah. But Margot finishes her like kind of assessment with saying that like the floor inside of the main like the critical
floor is
vault,
lava.
It got anti-traveler wards on it. And if you step on it, all the air will suck out of the room and you'll be choked to death.
But that's not the first time Penny has like traveled somewhere where there's no air.
That's true. He
should
traveled
be so,
to like three different worlds
he
that had
be,
no air.
He should be A, he should be totally used to it. And B, what he should have done was just showed up in scuba gear.
No, right? Not scuba gear.
Yeah. Because then he'd have oxygen on
no,
his back.
No, no.
Yeah, why not? Just put that way he doesn't worry
no,
about losing
scuba,
air.
Because I don't know enough about scuba gear.
Scuba
but,
is self-contained. But, something underwater breathing
underwater
apparatus.
Breathing apparatus.
Yeah. Yeah, but
so it's self-contained. It's not. He. It's not like snorkeling where you need to
okay,
put the little tube. You
of.
Thought it was snorkeling, huh? So they were going to put like a 10-foot-long snorkel out of the roof of the bank, and then he was just going to snorkel his way through the bank. All right. Good plan. Good thing you're not Margot.
Shut up. Penny's like, funny guys, how the fuck am I gonna get in? I can only travel, I can't do magic right now. And Elliot's like, nah, it's fine, we'll just do it, we'll make what any physical kid can make in their sleep, a gravity belt.
So wait, why haven't they had this? Why don't all of them have this? Like the Legion of Superheroes, everybody has an anti-gravity ring. Like literally when you join the Legion of Superheroes, they give you an anti-gravity ring.
Yes.
So why doesn't, like when you become a physical kid, if it's so easy to make, then why don't they just give everybody an anti-gravity belt
to
begin with?
It's a plot device.
No, it's a thing they just made up. Once again, they're for, oh, let's just give Penny an anti-gravity belt. Oh, yeah.
Mr. Evelyn's dad, have you ever listened to the Fic List podcast, now available on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and anywhere else major podcasts are available?
No, but I hear it's a wonderful podcast. And not only
an actual episode.
And not only should you listen to it, but you should rate it on iTunes and all the other ways. Give it a nice 5-star rating. That's what I think.
Yes. Thank you. I ask you this question because we have a concept on the Fic List that we sort of live by, and it's called accept the premise.
I fight against you've already heard my tumultuous relationship with fan fiction. So
just because you got burned in college doesn't
mean...
No,
I was in college. It was after college. Okay. There was no fan fiction when I was in college.
That's not true.
I know.
Fan fiction existed.
It was only Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk having sex.
Yeah.
That's all there was back then.
That's so bad.
I know it was. No, I knew about it. And
You were hip?
Well, I was hip to it. But the thing was, it was all sex. It was all slash fiction back when I was a kid. Like, that's all original fan fiction was just, you know, like, it was like Tijuana Bibles, right? Do you guys know what a Tijuana Bible is? Because that's really even earlier fan fiction, right? Did you cover that in your white paper that you wrote about fan fiction?
In my paper? Mm-hmm. I did not write
Aaron, do you know
that.
What a Tijuana Bible is?
I feel like I've heard the term before, but if you ask me to describe it or define it, I would just sit here and be like, nope.
Okay, well, now you have a new research project, and that is what a Tijuana Bible is actually like early fan, slight fan-made, but also parody types of... Yes, I know we have lots of notes, but this is the part everybody loves, especially your mother. They were little sex comic books, but they were about... mostly cartoon characters. There were also real people and like famous movie stars and stuff. But like, you know, if you ever wanted to see Popeye get it on with olive oil, or Mickey Mouse get it on with Minnie Mouse, or Superman get it on with Lois Lane or whatever, like there were these little like comic books. They were like the size of Chick Tracks, if you know what those are. And they were really well drawn. They were usually drawn in the style of the art. So the Popeye one looks just like Seeger drew it, but it's them having sex.
Okay, Dad.
And this is fan fiction. It's kind of an early form of fan fiction.
Okay, Dad. Okay, Dad.
So there you go. Now you know.
Okay.
The more we learn.
The more you know.
Hey, this show can't just exist to be commentary about a
That's
mediocre TV show.
That's literally the point.
There has to be other aspects to it as well.
That's the point. But an invisible monster shows up again.
Yes.
And
invisible plot device.
And Katie says, I need a spoon.
Which is not the greatest line in, you know, TV script writing history.
Proved that she had a whole shelf full of spoons.
That's
Why
later.
Didn't they just take that? Take
That's
one of those?
Right after this.
Oh, okay.
Right after this,
I think at that point it was in order to prove that it was related to those two women.
Yeah,
right.
I guess,
that was the idea.
Yeah,
of that?
Katie and Penny go back to the Mudongs, and we see another argument in Korean, and then Penny says, "Damn lady, use your words," and he gets smacked in the face.
That was pretty funny.
I wrote the spoon.
Yeah, I wrote spoon.
This is the first instance of Penny getting
spoon
like
smacked.
Getting smacked for being rude to someone for speaking their like native language.
And then I wrote right after that, all magicians are dicks.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter who they are. Just all of them in general, they're unpleasant people.
Yeah. But it turns out that the spoon, yes, is connected to them. I didn't catch their name. So the woman
Moon was one of them,
Moon,
I think. Yeah.
But the woman who was against Julia being there at all in the first place, she created the monsters using, you know, her menstrual blood and stuff, and it's gonna keep attacking Julia to get the child out of her body, or she has the abortion and gives them the money. It's one or the other.
It sounds like blackmail either way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's like, give us $1 million and we'll abort the baby, which is, and then they go, if you don't give us the money, we'll kill you. Right?
Yep.
So that's blackmail.
Such is Julia's
life.
But
also, there's a really great moment where when she says, you know, this happened with the menstrual blood, because the spoon is covered in blood, I think there's a moment where Arjun kind of makes a face like he thinks he maybe just got hit with menstrual blood, or like it, the timing of it implied that that was like
right,
he freaked out because he was like, oh, blood, gross. And I just thought, Arjun, no, baby. You know that spoon came from the gremlin. What are you doing? And it was quite funny.
It's okay.
Please feel welcome to edit that commentary out if you because I have nobody else laughed.
No, it's relevant.
I had the same reaction that I did notice his reaction to it, where he was like, it's menstrual blood. I think that's what it was.
Yeah. It's okay.
It looked intentional.
Very silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So now the heist. On to the heist.
Well, we see that Julia has been trying to make this machine that the Friedrich Beowulf.
The machine is called the universe.
It's called the quarterback, and it takes you back 15 seconds in time.
Once again, arbitrary game rules. Why only 4 tries? Like, if she had it hooked up to, let's say, old-timey...
She doesn't know it has 4 tries until she finishes it.
Well,
it's just that it goes back 15 seconds.
If you're going to build something, you should at least know how many tries there are, right?
Okay.
Oh, this car can only drive 10 miles. Stupid. All right. So, I mean, I get it. I get why they do it. It's drama, I guess. But the point is that there should have at least been some sort of physical manifestation of it. So let's say, for example, hooked. So on it was like a light bulb, like one of those old timey Russian light bulbs that I noticed had the number 5 on it, right? Did you notice there was actually a 5 on the machine?
I was focusing on the best bitches necklace.
Right. So I was wondering, correct, like, why is there a 5 on there, right? Which then made sense. However, what they should have done instead was kept showing you that light bulb as it decreased in number. So there was some sort of visual cue to help us, the audience, understand where things were. Don't you think that would have been better?
Yes, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Accept the premise.
No, cannot fight. Shush. Fight against the stupid.
Shush. But Katie gave Julia the best bitch's necklace because
I like that,
she can't leave break bills without getting chased by the spooky spoon monsters.
I like all the way that she was communicating with everybody through the mirrors and through the necklace, mm-hmm, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like using every possible way to keep in touch.
So then it's heist time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Nan, what do they use for the heist?
Shut up. It's heist time. It's heist time.
Should I play some heist music here?
No, and they have to get... No, they have to get fingers from 3 of the managers at the bank. One of the 3. There's Librarian, Neckbeard, and White Privilege. And Katie says, she'll take one of them. And then Q's like, oh, it's not... It can't be that hard, you know? And so Margo's like, fine, take my place.
So what's the criteria that get the fingers?
Well, Margo tells Katie, you know, all you gotta do is stick, she's like, ooh, let me try this, stick your finger in the drink and then stick it in his mouth, boom, baby, done. And they gotta get the finger in like their mouth or like an orifice, their own finger. So
whose finger?
The manager's finger. They had to get the fingers because it'll make like a coffee.
All right, this makes no sense.
No.
Shouldn't it be put your finger in an orifice on the person and that becomes, or is it they have to put your finger?
It's you get their finger.
But that makes no sense. How does that become your finger?
It's fine. It's fine.
No, I don't get it.
No, it's fine. It's fine because we go to the cottage.
Katie
comes back and she has the finger. Aaron knows. And then Q comes back and they're like, no, shut up. And Q comes back and they're like, oh, damn, how'd you get her? How'd you get her finger in your mouth? And Q...
He says nothing.
He says nothing. And they're like, oh, shit, bro. Q, oh, such a huge sacrifice.
So first of all, good for Q for getting some. Secondly.
Honestly.
Secondly, he was due. Secondly, it would have made more sense if they put the finger in their mouth and then they got the fingerprint on their tongue.
No.
Right?
No, because they need...
Because
this
then...
is, you're wrong. No.
Then he'd have to put something else somewhere on...
No. No.
There's a lot of things about this particular setup of magic that don't make a whole lot of sense.
It makes zero sense.
But you know, I don't really care because it's all leading up to that one moment where we realize that Quentin took one for the team and I'm here for it.
Well, it's also leading up to that visual of Katie with the big man finger.
That's
the comedy of the CG man finger and then Quentin with the very skinny female finger.
Yeah,
right.
But
that's the
some poor editor somewhere, some CGI editor was just like,
"Oh, it's not CGI.
I worked hard on
it.
It's probably half prosthetic."
No, it looked too good to be.
It's a half prosthetic, half.
It looked.
They probably made a fake finger and then put like
then
a little bit
smear...
of green, a little bit of green on the edges to make it so then they could edit out the excess finger in post.
You could
so
just,
then it looks thinner.
You could just use the finger tool in Photoshop and smear the edges together.
No.
To blend them.
Because Sarah Gamble notoriously loves practical effects. So, of course, they would do practical.
And this whole episode is filled with them, right? Like invisible ghosts
and
bees. Yeah, there's so many practical effects in this episode.
Speaking of bees, it's time for the heist, baby. Margot's staying behind because she's the brains, of course. And
she got dressed up for this heist, by the way. We talk about how, like, Margot looks incredible in this moment. She's, like, there with, like, her slicked back hair and her, like, really nice, like, floral suit. She's like, I'm ready. I am living.
I have to say, not that I normally pay too much attention to this, but I'd say they all dressed up for it because Penny looked actually pretty good and Elliot looked pretty good as well. I don't remember what Quentin
was
like.
Barely wearing a shirt.
Well, but that's, you know, he's in his full pirate heist mode.
Penny, you know, Penny is tits out every day.
Right, but perhaps, okay, fair. But, like, usually it's because he's wearing, like, a really deep, like, V-neck shirt that has, like, sleeves. In this particular case, I think he was legitimately wearing a vest. Like,
that's
not a waistcoat, but, like, a vest.
Like Dad.
Yeah, jacket without sleeves.
Like, interesting.
Yeah, it's so, it looks great on him, though. But.
Oh, it does. Yeah. I'm not complaining. I'm just pointing it out.
All right, so bees go into the bank. It chases everybody out, except for the two guards that are having sex in the closet.
Yeah,
and then they all, for some stupid reason, take off their beekeeper costumes.
But it's so good because we get to see Quentin struggling.
Yeah, I know. More Quentin comedy. I'm down for that. But
Quentin
comedy. But I don't think it was very smart for them to take off their bee costumes.
And they magically synchronize their watches.
Oh, they have trouble, don't they? Yeah. Syncing them. Isn't there like a moment
they're not
where...
the sharpest tools in this shed. We love them dearly, but perhaps they do not make the best of choices. I really love that tut that they do when they are bringing the, like, putting the bees back in the vent.
Yes.
That magic they do, like, sometimes the magic is, like, kind of glossed over. In this case, those movements were really cool. Like, I loved the choreography of that.
Right, yeah. Like I say later on, when they do actual magic in the show, that's when it's fun, right? Like, like there are moments in the show that the magic seems kind of like, you know, expedient to the plot. But when they go through that elaborate, like there's a couple of moments. I think also the later when they're unlocking the lock, I think that's a really good moment also, right? Because that's like really the first true manifestation of magic we actually see where it's like, no, hang on, where like we actually see the complication involved in the actual magic, right? Where
textbooks.
Well, but we've never seen like what's in the textbook. We only know that they have to study it and it's complicated and it's mathy. They always say how they got the math wrong. But this is like really the first time we've actually seen the math for the magic, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, and then how that applies to like the real world situation that they're in.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Well, that's why they panic so much, right? They've had tons of moments where they're like, oh, I can't get the math right, or I can't figure it out, or, you know, and now, like, okay, only 2 seasons and 7 episodes in, do we finally get some sort of insight to why that happens in the storyline, which, to be honest, I would have shown this maybe in episode 2 or 3 of the first season.
But we do see cool magic in the first season.
No, but we don't see, like, what effort it takes to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, the heist commences, and there's fun music playing the whole time.
Heist music.
Heist music. And then Penny travels into the vault with his gravity belt, and the music stops because he's facing the wrong way. And he switches around, and he adjusts his height a little, and then the music starts again, and he keeps going. And then it stops again because he fucks up and he almost drops.
Yes.
And then it starts again. It's so good.
Yeah, it is good.
My note from this section is, honey, why didn't you bend your knees?
That's what we said!
Yes. That's what we said. But we also said that he should have realized that gold bars would have weighed him down. That's just right. Stupid for him to not have realized.
It's Elliot's fault.
No. Elliot was right. Penny fucked up.
No, because yes. He was the one who made the gravity belt.
No, he didn't. It was Penny should have been realized when he picked up one and he started to sink down.
They both
and then Penny grabbed
the
like six more and like loaded up. That's he should true. Have realized that if one was going to make him sink down, which he did, he should have gone, maybe I should only take like four of these things or something. Yeah. Right.
Or he could have bent his knees.
Yes, he could have bent his knees.
Yeah.
There's a solution here.
But then, of course, because he didn't bend his knees.
His feet touched the ground.
He sets off the Tom Cruise trap. Yep. And now he's stuck.
He incepts Elliot because Elliot is asleep, but he's also technically sort of awake. But, you know, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's actually that was really... that
the
was like one
of him asleep
right,
and
but,
then awake. And
right,
then
right. But I'm saying that that actually was like one of the, for all their convoluted nonsense, this was actually the best payoff of that convoluted nonsense they've done so far.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where like all this other junk and even I was like, wait, what's, oh, okay. It's I like in my head, I very, you know, I had to do a little line connecting to go, oh, wait. It's Penny who can incept, but he's incepting Elliot, who's asleep in Fillory, whose clone is in the real world, who then is communicating to everybody and via Julia through the mirror. You know, like they're the best bitches necklace. Like I was able to draw the lines, but it was the first time that like all those lines have kind of paid off.
I'm proud of you.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. I do pay attention most of the time. But why did they take off their clothes? That was stupid. They should have stayed in their beekeeper. I get it. You want to see their face. You want to see their fashion. But yes, that was dumb of them.
The Mongoli.
From somebody who is planning a heist, that was a bad idea.
The Mongoli clothes. We need to see them.
And also, how did the sex guards not hear the bees?
They're too busy.
Or anything else.
Bees are like, wow, have you ever been near a swarm of bees?
Yeah, Aaron.
No, I have not.
They're loud. Bees are loud.
I believe you.
Yeah. But Elliot and Penny talk, and he's like, dude, you fucked up. And he's like, just tell Katie I'm fine, but I'm running out of air.
He's like, I like you're mixing the message here.
Yeah. But then the guards come out, and the gang, Katie, Elliot, and Quentin all go back inside the bank, and they're like, oh shit.
See, they should have been putting their costume on again. They should have just left it on.
Well,
it would have saved some time.
Yeah, but
particularly how long it took Quentin to take off his costume in the first place.
Yeah, but Elliot breaks out his secret weapon, which is like a little disco ball,
and he rolls it, and it makes the guards
do a little dancey dance,
do a disco dance.
I have so many questions as to why Elliot would carry that around with him that I don't think are supported by the text or answered by the show.
He said that he brought it as like a secret weapon.
Yes, but I also think that the writers the writers also wrote themselves into a corner, and they're like, how are we going to get this out? And so, of course, they went to the cheapest of tactics in animation and fantasy shows, which is getting people to dance. That is the lowest form. When you've run out of all ideas, you just make your characters dance. That's what happens at the end of Shrek.
Oh my God.
That's what happens on, I don't know. There's all
we will
types
speak
of,
no ill of Shrek, sir.
There's all types of shows that they use that as a plot cop out.
Shush.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Shush. No, this is not a Guardians of the Galaxy podcast.
Oh,
this
but
is
just
not
think
a
of
Shrek.
How glorious it would be as a Guardians of the Galaxy podcast.
No.
Then we could talk about Kurt Russell.
No. But Penny's like about to pass out, and they have less than 4 minutes The door isn't opening. Oh, and who pops in but Niff and Alice?
Yes, and then we get to see Niff and Alice show her homework, work, math work.
Well, she makes Quentin agree to give her control of his body for 30 seconds, and she promises they'll do a word of bond to make it official and everything.
Right.
That she just wants to That's not going to cause legs.
Plot complications later on,
no,
is it?
No, not
for the rest of the season or two?
Mm-hmm. Aaron, can we talk about how Elliot notices something's up with Quentin?
Uh-huh. What do you think I wrote in my notes? I wrote Elliot knows.
He gives him such a look.
He looks like... Yeah, he looks at Q and he's just like, this is not right. This is, I know you better than this. This is not correct. Like, what are you doing? Okay, something's wrong.
Yeah.
But doesn't say anything because that's where we're at. Yeah. They had limited time. Yeah.
It's
absolutely
so good.
Maybe the show would be just as good if just nobody talked. They should have done like a silent episode, right? Like Buffy did. Because I think they could have pulled it off.
Well, Father, there's sort of an episode-ish like that.
And when?
Season 3. Oh, best wow. Season. Oops, all bangers.
Mm-hmm. Woohoo. Correct.
Is the best one.
Is it your favorite one?
It is my favorite season.
No, I'm saying is your favorite episode.
It's not my favorite episode, but it's... My favorite episode is the season finale of season 3. Mm. It's delicious.
All right, well, we'll just have to wait another... We'll have to wait. How many episodes left do we still have?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, but so let's finish this heist.
Q cracks the code and they get inside. And Julia gets her machine working.
Her dumbass machine.
Oh my God. But it saves them because
her plot machine.
They go to save Penny, and then as they go to leave, Q accidentally steps on the floor and activates alarms.
Wait a second. How does Julia...
Because they ran out of time.
But how does Julia know how to make a plot device machine?
Because they were making it in Free Trader Beowulf and they had already created it, and this was like version 2.0. So she was just like upgrading it.
Wait, so that's why all those internet nerds got together? Is there like, let's make a time machine?
They were making like cool magic. Did you not pay attention?
They didn't seem like the crafty type.
Oh my God. I...
And once again, plot device.
I just need you to know that I'm delighted, Evelyn.
Plot device machine.
I'm glad you're having fun.
So you only have four arbitrary rewinds.
Well, no, because the battle magician comes in and right, she
uses a cool electro whip,
and she, you know,
like in front of a machine. I still have questions about.
Yeah, I know that's a bad choice.
She's just an electrical Balrog.
She had a AK-47 at her disposal. Why didn't she just open up with that?
Because then we wouldn't get to see them do their little shaky shake.
No, then they wouldn't have gotten to do the little special effect, the non-practical special effect of the lightning whip.
Yeah, they all get like.
Lightning whipped.
Yeah, and then so Julia resets it, and then they have four rewinds left. They go back out. They get zapped again. Yeah. Three rewinds left. They go
At
back
this
out.
Point, it's like, okay, maybe come up with a new plan, but no.
You don't make a plan until the last time.
No,
they're dumb.
No, they just keep going out. They don't do anything.
Yeah, it's stupid, right?
So they have...
So here's a question that occurred to me.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, are we at the point... At this point in the show, or just in general, can you remind me if Penny can travel with other people?
Yes.
Okay. And the sigil only works in the vault, right?
Yeah, the anti-traveler wards. Yeah.
Right, so why didn't they go into the hallway and travel out of the bank?
You know...
Guys, think for 3 seconds.
Sometimes they think they're so smart, and they're like, we need to, you know why? It's
why?
Because then we wouldn't have Elliot jumping in front of Q.
Get to kill the clone.
Yeah.
And get rid of that plot line.
Yeah, then they can't make Elliot's seizure.
Yes, so yes, battle mage attacks. Elliot jumps in front of Quentin.
Blood splurts everywhere.
Wait a second. If you're going to get hit by an electro whip.
If he's made of clay, does he bleed?
Well, and if he is
so
made of clay.
Living clay.
Why does electricity cause him to bleed?
Why does electricity cause him to bleed?
Electricity doesn't cause you to bleed. It would just cause you to burn up, right?
Yeah,
So once again, no blood. And also...
let's note that it's non-practical digital blood.
Yeah.
So
it's
again,
great.
the
No, it's not digital.
It was digital blood, yes.
Not one.
Yes, they don't use real blood on TV shows anymore.
It's too fake messy. Blood.
You, as somebody who was laid in a pile of a pool of sticky Caro syrup blood, and so have I. They don't use that stuff anymore. They mostly do it digitally. Unless it's like,
they did
like it. The one moment, even the one where Julia, where she was like bleeding out of her nose, like that little tiny bit of blood.
That's makeup, dude.
No, that may have been digital also.
That's not actually, digital.
Because it actually was dripping out of her nose. I was
That's
watching it.
That's just called fake blood.
No, you know how hard it is? All right, ready? 1, 2, 3, cameras roll. Have the fake blood roll out of your nose. No, it doesn't. That's too hard to do. I would wager that blood out of Julia's nose when
wrong.
She got beat up by invisible ghost
you're
monster
wrong.
Was digital blood. As well as, we'll go back and watch it. The Elliot's blood is digital.
It's not.
It is.
Not when it spreads
it is.
Out.
It is. It is.
No. When it spreads
it
afterwards,
is.
Yes, but.
No, it is. The whole time is digital.
Anyway, Aaron, let's talk about how Elliot shields Quentin's body. With his own.
Yes, let's talk about how this is like one of the early, like one of those moments early on where you're like, ah, Quillian. Okay,
a love early.
Early, yeah.
Quillian?
Season 2.
Early?
Yeah, season 2.
You've told me since episode 1 there was Quillian.
Oh, absolutely, there is, but I'm saying this is another moment.
How many moments have there been?
There's so many.
Up to now.
There's so many.
How many?
So many.
Yeah, aren't you keeping track?
No, I'm not keeping a tally.
You should.
I could probably
then you could
go
write,
and ask my friends after this. Because
then
be like,
you could write fan fiction about each one of them.
People have.
About every Quelliot moment?
Right. Yes, Dad.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I've read all of them. Thank you.
And which one's the best one?
Evelyn's.
Oh,
Evelyn's is the
no.
best one.
No.
That's the correct answer, given this particular where we are currently.
No.
Maybe the best animatic.
No.
That's true. Anyway, there's lots of wonderful early Quelliot moments and like ones that are earlier before this. I just think this is one of those moments where you can really pinpoint that they like have a moment.
Yeah.
In a way that it feels a little bit more like intentional because Q really does hesitate big time and is like, wait a minute, like Elliot's not well, like we got to deal with this.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, in a way that was sort of meaningful, which is right. why I pinpointed as something of a Quelliot moment.
Yeah, he
also I just love them.
Yeah,
and plus also it's just another way to have Quentin have to experience the death of one of his dear friends.
Yes, how many?
How many times? 52 at least, or what? How many?
40
times.
Yeah. So technically 41.
So he's seen Elliot die 41 times now.
Yeah. No, he hasn't seen him.
And he's seen Alice die 41 times.
Yeah.
Has he seen Margo hasn't died yet in this existence?
Not yet.
And what about Penny? He has hands cut off.
Soon.
And what about
God.
Julia
I'm so
and
sad.
Katie?
Aaron, died? I don't want to think about it.
Why do we do this to ourselves, Evelyn? I have questions.
I don't know.
Why are you fans of this show? What is it? What is it about this show that you like?
Yeah. Oh. And Aaron, there was a time
when
I really liked the show.
Were you a fan of the show when it first came on?
I was not. So I, like many people, found this show after season 4, episode 5.
Yep.
When they started really pushing Quelliot, I was like, it's going to be canon, it's going to be a thing. And I was really excited. So I went back and tried to watch as much as I could, but I was also watching season 4 concurrently. And then I stopped being a fan of the show after season 4, episode 13. Mm-hmm. Not stopped being a fan of the show, but I stopped watching it because I was like, okay, no. So it was a speed run of an experience, and it was whiplash. Yeah.
All of you magician fans are all traumatized.
Yeah.
Deeply, frankly.
All been victimized by this TV show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, that seems on point for the plot of most of these episodes.
Yes.
All right, so we lose Clone, but it's okay. He's just a clone.
But Quentin looks at him so sadly, and he's like, but Elliot.
No, wait a second.
He's fine.
What happened to Margot Clone?
Margot Gollum?
Yeah.
Margot. She's in Todd's closet.
Right, so she still exists. So we never actually got to see Gollum on Gollum sex?
No.
That's a fan fiction. I can send
that's
it to you.
That's a fan fiction.
Somebody, I'm not
I can send it
one.
To you.
So they run out of the bank. Sans Elliot.
Elliot starts seizing.
They got their gold.
He starts seizing in Fillory.
Yeah. And we that's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and then Katie stole the battle magician's whip. Penny punched her.
All right, so let's
No, she shocks the invisible
kills the
monster.
Invisible monster.
And it had like pinned Julia and like choked her out and
right,
stuff. And
yep.
So we zoom into Julia's face, and then we zoom
that's
out, and she's had the abortion.
Blood. Hang on, let's talk about this for a second.
What?
So now
we're almost
seen,
to the end.
I know we are, but now that we've seen Julia with lightning whip and
Katie
with lightning whip and Julia with time machine, now even more so I want to see this TV show where like Katie
like
is whipping monsters with her lightning whip, and Katie and Julia is making them go back in time 15 seconds to redo screw ups, and then they have their god baby that they're protecting like Baby Yoda. And yeah, it's they're you know, they're living their life as lovers, and they're fighting monsters in the Magicians universe, right? This is, I think, the spinoff show that they should have done. Like one of the two is a lost opportunity.
How many spinoff shows is that now? Like
so
seven?
Many. There's like
oh, no,
five.
This is just a continuation of the
14?
Other one.
You haven't heard.
The
37.
One, yeah, there's a spinoff show.
To catch up on the episodes,
yeah,
Aaron.
The spinoff
I know,
show
I'm so sorry. I am behind.
The Ghostbusting group, right? That was one of them. Was a spinoff show.
And then two men and a baby, but it's Katie and Julia.
Right,
two
that, that's part of this one, right? But now they have a lightning whip.
Quentin getting negged by Alice.
Oh yeah, the Quentin and Alice romantic comedy where
no, not really.
It's
romantic.
Niff and Alice though, and just nagging him the whole time as a spooky ghost girl.
Yeah.
And what else was there? Another
the opposite
spin-off?
Of a manic pixie dream girl.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Julia has her abortion, is gone.
Yeah.
Hooray. Well,
wait,
but
so we're finally done with this plot?
But there was a complication.
Of course there was.
And that's where it ends.
Of course there was a complication. So we are leaving on three cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're leaving on Julia complication, Elliot seizures, and...
He might be dead, who knows?
And Penny can't find a shirt to wear.
But is that correct. Really a problem?
Well, maybe not for Penny. All right, so Evelyn.
No, Aaron.
All right, Aaron. I was going to save Aaron for last because they were the guest, but that's okay. Aaron can go first. Aaron, how many crowns? Wait, no. What
out
we,
of five.
Are we crowns, right? How many crowns are we giving
yeah,
this
what's your,
episode?
Yeah, what'd you rate this?
I have a long and storied history with rating systems. Is this an Uber scale or an Amazon scale? In the sense, I'm kidding. I've listened to your episodes. I would give this episode. I don't want to go first.
See, that's why I suggested
Fine.
Aaron go last.
Fine, I'll go. Five out of five.
Five out of five.
I fucking love this episode. The heist. All of it's good. We get to see Niff and Alice nagging the shit out of Quentin, and we get to see Penny looking just chef's kiss. Lovely little man. Arjun is looking his best in this fucking episode. He's looking love-struck. He is looking ready to go, ready to do anything. He's funny. He's beautiful. He's lovely. He's giving sass. He's giving sarcasm. It's great. We get to see Elliot making drinks, looking wonderful. In his little robe too. We get to see some good Julia sass, and there's just a lot of funny moments.
So you like
it. It's great. It's a great episode. I personally enjoy it a lot.
Okay.
I'm also very soft on the rating a lot of the time.
Yes, you
so.
Are. You're the most liberal of our rating people. All right.
You are the Alan of this podcast. Yes.
All right. I am going to give it a... Yeah, I give it a 5 out of 5.
Hell yeah.
Because, yeah, everybody was on top form.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, that's okay. You can hate. It's all right. And I like that somebody wised up and said, hey, let's do an episode with everybody in it. And like we mentioned earlier, they're at their best when they are a group. That's a, they're a very dynamic and charismatic group of actors. And you know, as you both pointed out, there's also some very nice subtextual acting going on from, you know, people like Elliot and Quentin and even Penny. It's good. So yeah, good job. Heist episode. Normally heist episodes are cheesy and a cop-out, but this case, it's a good one. And actually the plan is pretty good too with part of it. At least the bees part is smart. The rest of it, a little slipshod, but...
it's fine. We forgive Margo.
All right.
Okay, Aaron.
All right, Aaron, what do you think?
So I feel the need to give it a 5. I have always really liked this episode. I think on second watch, I'm a little bit more critical of some of the plot device stuff that we talked about a little bit. I kind of agree with you, Scott, that they just kind of like throw things in the way of the plot and they don't really explain it and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I can see that now on second watch a little bit more, but I remember being absolutely delighted by this episode when I watched it for the first time, and that counts for something.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah, it is such a joy in a show that is very often real depressing. Yeah. And I do think we can give it 5 out of 5 crowns. I think the ensemble in this show, as we discussed, is like the shining star, and this is one of those episodes where they get a real chance to show what they can do and be the best ensemble that they are.
Very good.
So yeah, 5 out of 5.
Good job, the magicians. You finally did it.
No.
You finally got a 5 out of 5.
Well, they've gotten that before.
I'm from you.
Yeah, and you.
That's true. Okay. All right. So, Evelyn. Well, Aaron, I guess. Aaron, where can we find you? Oh, wait. What? Oh, we forgot to ask about what's going on in the world of magicians. What's going on in the fandom of the magicians?
So, the Magician's D&D book is coming out in the new year.
Right.
And right now, Stella Maeve is doing cameos for like $135.
Who's Stella Maeve?
She plays Julia.
Okay, cool. Are you going to get one?
No, it's $135.
Well, but the girl got to eat.
You know, she's making the TV royalty stuff.
I hope so.
Hopefully. Yeah, you know, Magician Season 5 is going on Netflix in the new year, which I will regretfully be watching with you.
Yes.
Eventually.
I look forward to your torture.
You know who's also doing a fan thing? A Comic-Con virtual thing is Harvey Gillen.
Oh, yeah, we get
from,
it.
Who plays Benedict.
Yep. Yeah, the dad's crush. He loves Harvey.
Todd, I thought.
You love Adam DeMarco more?
I don't know.
You don't know? Why not both?
I like Guillermo more than I like Benedict.
Why not both?
I like Guillermo more than Benedict.
Okay.
I mean, I like the actor. He seems like a very cool, fun guy. But I like the character Guillermo more.
There's also The Magician's Big Bang, which is happening. Signups for writers are right now, and artists will be in April, I think. And there's also the Quelliot Evermore event based on Taylor Swift's new album, Evermore. Because
you guys just need any.
Well, Quentin is a Swiftie, okay? Quentin's a Swiftie.
But what about Elliot?
He's not.
Well, then how's that going
to
work?
Because Quentin is a Swiftie, we need to honor his roots.
It was also a Tuesday, so you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Aaron? Are you plugged in, I assume, to
Yeah,
something?
give us more details about your podcast.
Or other things that you might know about.
The podcast. Blah, 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 about the podcast?
The podcast.
Yeah. So I am the co-host of a podcast called The Fic List. As I sort of jokingly mentioned earlier, we are available pretty much anywhere you can find your podcast, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, the Ether. Google it. It's fine. And my friend Alan and I send each other fan fictions to read, rate, and review. And we treat it pretty seriously, like silly, but serious. We're not there to make fun of it. We're there to actually sort of examine it and talk about it and figure out why people write it and why we love reading it so much and talk about the things that we enjoy without sort of negging anybody.
Right. And what was your favorite non-magicians fanfic?
That's a tough question. So, my favorite non-magicians fanfic. Of course, I've only read Quelliot for like a year and a half now, but
yeah.
one of the ones that we talked about that is a in the podcast that is really well done, and it, I think it stands the test of time for me, is a fan fiction. Oh God, what's it called? I'm terrible with authors and titles, but it's there was a Glee fan fiction that we discussed that was about it's Clayne. Mr. Rogers, did you ever watch
Dad Glee? Is aware. We
I've seen Glee.
He has sat in on many an episode.
Okay, so Blaine and Kurt, and it is a alternate universe fan fiction where they meet because Blaine sends a text to the wrong number, and it ends up being Kurt's phone, and they end up having the entire fan fiction is written through text messages and like phone, like edited photos and little like music clips and stuff. Cute. Hold on, I'm trying to find the title of it because it actually deserves to be shared.
Probably you could just find the episode that you talked about it on.
You could. You could. It's in there somewhere. But yeah, anyway, that was that continues to be one of my favorite fan fictions of all time. And Alan gave it a 5 on our rating scale, which I was very happy about because it was the first one, which means I won.
Okay.
Nice.
But what's your favorite magician's fic?
You said it was
no,
yours.
No, that's not allowed.
If I had to pick something that Evelyn didn't write, no, I think the one that I will always come back to, and Evelyn, you probably, anybody who's in the Magicians fandom will probably agree with me on this. It's Something Good from HMG fanfic, aka Harriet. I was one of the folks who read that as a work in progress, and I would just wait by my computer for updates on that. And with the time zones, I would end up getting updates at like 1 a.m. So when she would post, and either I would stay up super late reading them because they're pretty long chapters, or I would know that I was getting it and then I would read it at work the next day instead of doing work for like an hour. And I every day my friend Caitlin and I used to work together, and Caitlin is a, you know, pretty prominent figure in the ficlist lore, and poor Caitlin, I used to go over to her office every day and go, and this is what happened in the episode, in the new update from Harriet today. I can't believe it. Oh my God. She'd be like, hello, good morning to you too. Or I'm not done with my coffee yet. So Something Good wrecked me, and I think about it all the time. And if I ever meet Harriet, I think I'm going to lose my mind.
It's really good.
All right.
We've talked about HMG fanfic before. We've talked about Harriet. Oh, I have extensively.
All right. Yes. So other than your podcast, Aaron, where can we find you online?
You can find me mostly on Twitter, having loud opinions frequently.
And we love it. We love your loud
opinions. Yeah. And my Twitter handle is at AaronAlice5 because Aaron Alice was not available. Yeah. And that's pretty much the best place to find me is Twitter.
Where can we find you online, Evelyn?
You can find me at wow_then on Twitter and at fishytwaras on Instagram and Patreon and under the name Evelyn Rogers. Where can people find you?
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MightyBedBug. And you can find me at Scott Rogers Designer on Patreon or on the Facebooks because I'm old and I like the Facebooks. Because I can share pictures. I can share Mandalorian memes.
You can share memes on any
platform. I know. But it's harder to share them on Instagram. And, you know, it's the interface is very, it's not old person friendly. It's much more for you kids.
Okay.
So, but occasionally I'll share drawings or other work in progress pictures and things like that.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it. We did it. We did it with our first non-related to us guest. So, Aaron, thank you so very much.
Thank you for not being related to us.
thank you for not being related to us. And thank you for being our guest. We loved having you. And
thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Awesome. And thank you, audience, for listening to us.
Future Aaron listening.
Exactly. Yeah, really. other Aarons out there. Make sure you give us a nice rating on iTunes and Podbean and all the other places that we are online. And we will, Aaron, you will hear us next time on
Fillory
and Father.
Yay.
Yay. Yay.
We did it.
We did it.
Okay, here we go.
Thanks, Aaron. Bye.